This is the North Georgia Life Podcast. Embrace life where you live. Welcome back to the North Georgia Life Podcast. It is Jake, your host. In today's episode, I am going to be having the conversation with you that I have literally at least once a day right now relative to what is going on in the real estate market. If you have absolutely no care whatsoever what is going on in the real estate market, but you would just kind of like to be informed about some greater things to pay attention to in the next 6 months of the calendar year, there's still going to be some good nuggets for you. So I'm going to try to be brief but specific in a couple different arenas. So I have this conversation, like I said, literally about every day at least once. It is every day is kind of like Groundhog Day, because what people are seeing is that the market is shifting, and from a real estate perspective, the market needs to shift. It needed to shift. It's not going to drop off the planet. So we're going to talk about that here in a minute. But from a global economy perspective. Okay. Again, if you want to kind of check out of what is going on in the real estate market in the North Georgia area, which, by the way, just FYI, can we all just say thank goodness we're here, because we are in, regardless of what is going on in the world of real estate in general in the country, North Georgia is one of the highest demand areas in the Southeast, definitely in the state of Georgia, but you're in a great spot. So if you're like freaked out, panic mode, like you shouldn't be, like take a look around you. We are in a growing area. We are in a high demand area. People want to be here because it's gorgeous. Like, why wouldn't you? So, but if you have no interest whatsoever, three key areas to kind of pay attention to the next 6 months in terms of what is going on in the world of Congress, legislation, the current administration, and that sort of thing. So one is, what is Congress going to do with taxes when the tax legislation comes around in the fall? So again, I'm not going to get too lost in the weeds here in terms of what specific things or political parties or anything like that. So relative to taxes, if there is any increase made to taxes by Congress, okay, one, that should signal to you that is a quite frankly a deliberate act to try to push the country into a recession. And I know that's like the worst word possible right now, but with inflation being what it is, with interest rates having changed the way they have in this past year, for Congress to do that, again, not political party, but for the body of Congress to make that conscious decision when groceries are costing you 30% more, when gas is double what it was 2 years ago, when all those things play out, to then consciously raise taxes, okay, that should be like, regardless of which side of the aisle you're on, you should vote your elected officials out of office the next chance you have, because that is like there's no mystery around what is being done there. So just pay attention to the tax legislation. Usually your national news coverage is not going to pick up on some of the details. Like if you follow Fox or CNN or ABC, or whatever, go into some of the financial, whether it's Forbes or Wall Street Journal or stuff like that. People that are more dialed into the actual economic side of it and not the political side of it, if that makes sense. Okay. Second thing to watch out is, are there any moves whatsoever that are going to be done to move the United States towards energy independence? Okay. And I know those are two words, and people hear that yeah, they kind of lose their marbles a little bit right now. But believe it or not, the United States at one point was energy independent. Like I know people, when you say that, you're like, that is blasphemy. Like, no, we really were. There was it was a long time ago. But we have so many different options in terms of energy supply, production, and resources here within the United States that, quite frankly, for either or both parties to not be doing anything to move us in that direction in a way that doesn't bankrupt the country is, you know, quite frankly, just it doesn't make any sense because whether it's the Keystone Pipeline or, you know, the Russian pipeline or the Argentinian pipeline, you know, if it's oil, it's oil. If it's gas, it's gas. And if you care about the planet, you should care about all the planet, not just the planet here in the United States. So there's lots of factors that are involved. And again, I'm not trying to push on any sore subjects right now, but the reality of another country that may or may not be hostile or agreeable to the United States being able to completely change an economy in one fell swoop, just by the nature of the supply of energy, that should be an indication to all of our elected officials, Republican, Democrat alike, that there are some things that need to change, and we're out of balance. We've been out of balance through different political parties and regimes and administrations. So this is not a one size. This is a one size fits all. This is. We as a country need to figure out how to get there, and or at least be heavily weighted on the energy independence side. That will help take a lot of the economic uncertainty off the table and give us the ability to not be so impacted when one country invades another country. So that's that. The third thing is supply chain. Okay, there are things. I actually had someone from our corporate office come in. From Texas, I don't know, a month or so ago. And so they flew into Atlanta at like 10 o'clock at night. And they said there were tractor trailers everywhere. And he's driving up from the airport. And he's like, how do we have a supply chain problem? Like, there's trucks everywhere at 10 o'clock at night, you know, taking stuff to places. Like, so there are things. It's literally an act of Congress, and it's an act of Congress. That can be done to impact the supply chain world for the better and help a lot of things get sifted out and move through. Some of that is where supplies come from. Some of that is some I don't know. Regulation is probably too broad of a word, but we'll just say regulation things in that nature. So. If you see any of those headlines, if you see any of these things going on, just pay attention to those things. If you're just, you know, maybe have your head in the sand or you're a doomsdayer or whatever, like those three things will have a significant impact on kind of where our economy goes and where things go, whether they rebound quickly or it takes a while or whatever. So let's switch gears to the real estate market. I have this conversation, again, like I said, all the time, and here's what I'll just kind of share. So I had this conversation with somebody maybe a week or so ago. High D personality came out kind of guns blazing. I was like, okay. And he said, where do you think the interest rates are going to be by the end of the year? So this is 20, you know, we're in June at this point, mid-June of 2022. And I said, you know, we're, depending on your credit and that sort of thing, I said, you could be in the mid-fives right now. You could be around six. I said, I think probably by the end of the year, we'll be 6.5%, maybe 7%. And quite frankly, my caveat to everyone when I say that is, we should have been here like a year ago. I knew lenders, people that are in banking themselves that were refinancing their own houses in the spring of 2020, 2 years ago, because the interest rate had hit 3.5%, and they were like, it's going to be here for like 3 weeks. We're refinancing now while we can lock that rate in because it's never getting better than this. And then 3.5% stayed around for 18 months. And if you want to write a prescription for how to cause a lot of heartburn for people, give people effectively free money to buy a house for almost 2 years. That's basically what it was. And so we needed to get to the 6 to 7% interest rate, which is still historically a phenomenal interest rate. I mean, I ask people all the time, like, what's the interest rate on your credit cards? What's the interest rate on your car? I mean, anything you have, like, this is your probably biggest financial asset, and it's a really pretty good interest rate. You know, historical average is like 8.25, 8.5, something like that. So we're still 2 points below the historical average, which is huge. So what we didn't need was what the Fed did, which is leave it way too low for too long, and then all of a sudden, like a light switch, just turn the switch, and in just over 60 days, it jumps up 2 percentage points. For people on the just comprehension standpoint, is not specific because there's other factors involved pertinent to the individual, but in general, a 1% change in interest rate will change your buying power by about 10%. So let's just say you're buying a $400,000 house at 4% interest rate. When it moves to 5%, you're now looking at a $40,000, roughly a $40,000 decrease in your purchasing power. It could be 25, it could be, you know, 45, but it's going to be roughly 10% in terms of your buying power for what you can afford. Now, obviously, that is going to impact the sale side of things, the listing side of things, because people can't just give you whatever you want anymore. Their purse strings have been tied down some. And if they've been paying attention to their monthly budget, that has gotten significantly restricted over the last 6 months or so, 6 months, especially the last 6 months. So this person I was talking to asked me about interest rates, and, you know, told him, you know, my thought, what my observation was based on conversations I have with people that are much smarter than me, what I see in the market and so forth. And he said, effectively, I think it's going to be like 10%. I was like, I'm sorry, you think we're going to go from 6% to 10%. Okay. How we got to 6%, let's talk about that to begin with, because basically what the Fed did was this is my observation based on what I've seen and paid attention to in the last year and a half, 2 years, relative to the interest rates. So when COVID happened, the drop in interest rate was really an economic, part of the economic, you know, kind of stimulus strategy of making sure we don't go into absolute chaos, Great Depression, you know, kind of thing, effectively for fear. So you loosen up some money via interest rates, so your dollar can now buy more than it did, 2 months ago. And then we had the stimulus packages and all that stuff that was kind of compounding that. Then what happened was we stayed there. And what I think the primary driver of us staying there was the Fed, who is not an elected body, quite frankly, should never exist, should not stay in power in terms of setting interest rates. That's a whole nother conversation. But I believe they were waiting on the current administration to make some changes relative to those three things we already talked about: taxes, energy independence, and supply chain. And in January, February of this year, 2022, I think it was the Treasury Secretary, basically went before Congress. You saw this in the news for like a week. It was a very, very short cycle, and basically kind of just effectively threw their hands up and be like, "Well, we got it wrong," and you know, we're watching, regardless of what your political view is. You're just kind of watching the current administration just kind of shrug their shoulders and like, "We don't know how to fix it. We don't know what to do," and like it's not a simple fix. This is a complicated world we live in. But when that happened, that's when you started seeing the Fed change the interest rate. And so basically what my observation was, the Fed was waiting on the administration to do some of what the administration and the political side of things has power to do, and they didn't do anything. Effectively didn't do anything. And so the Fed said, okay, we're stepping in and we're going to put the e-brake on this thing because we have the power to do something to help corral inflation, all the price hikes and all that sort of thing. And so that's what they did. They went through and increased interest rates, I think maybe twice prior to the big hike in June. And the big hike in June was a 0.75 point. So when you hear basis points, that is like a fraction of a percentage point. They basically changed in a day, and it was, they kind of communicated they were doing it, but then they do it in a day, like it's like on your calendar, this is when the rate increase is going to happen or the rate change is going to happen. They changed it 0.75 point. So getting back to what we just talked about, They basically changed people's buying power that day by like 7% or so. They reduced it. That was the first time in 40 years that in four decades that they have done an increase or a change in interest rate that big in a single sitting, effectively. Going back to my conversation with the guy about 10%, they did that one time in 40 years. They would have to do that every single month for the rest of this year to get to 10%. Okay? So if you're in that camp, you have to understand, theoretically, I guess they could do it because they don't have to abide by anybody's laws except themselves. Which is why they shouldn't be in a democratic society. But what do I know? But they would have to do something. They've done one time in 40 years and do it every month for 6 months. I just don't see that happening. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Hopefully, you will agree that's kind of in the crazy camp, but that is like just not really realistic. There'd have to be some other like major things going on behind the scenes that no one sees right now for that to happen. Okay. So I don't see that happening at all. What we do see is the multiple offer situations, all the above appraisal, all the, extra money, quite frankly, the crazy cycle that we've been seeing take a real quick tailing off with that interest rate change. Because again, people's dollar is not going to buy them as much house. And so now people are taking a little bit longer to make decisions. The days on the market is increasing beyond a day or two, which, about 6 weeks ago, I had a conversation with another agent. And I said, the best thing that could happen to a real estate market is to have 7 to 10 days on market be the norm for a little bit. Because when it's a day or two on the market, people do crazy. People lose their minds because it's, I got to have, I must. And then they just start throwing out, crazy things. And that impacts the market going forward. Not wise. It's been happening for 2 years. There's like it is what it is. But it basically where some people would say we're in this bubble. I would say we've kind of been blowing the bubble. Like it'll come down. It's not going to pop. But it's been inflated. Kind of self-inflicted, if I can use that term. So. So 7 to 10 days on market would be great because the seller has a short sale cycle. It's not a giant pain in the butt. The buyer gives the seller a good offer, an attractive offer, and the buyer doesn't do crazy in terms of their offer details. So that would be great. And the thing it's going to do is where you know, a year ago or 2 years ago, people were basically, you could put a for sale sign on pretty much anything, and sell it and have multiple offers. Right now, and again, that was because you had so many people have access to more, you know, effectively free money in home buying than they've ever had before. What's going to happen is the sellers are going to need to have a better house to warrant the same money. So that means the repairs, the, you know, stained carpet, the you know, XYZ miscellaneous repairs or improvements around the house, you're probably going to have to do some of those to get your price. And it, quite frankly, that, like, hello, like, that's that should be normal. That should be common sense. But we have not been in the normal or common sense realm for the last 2 years in real estate. So just know that if you're in the June, July, you know, on period, and you're having a conversation with a real estate agent, and they're like, you don't have to do anything, just put a sign in it, and, you know, set it and forget it kind of thing, probably not getting good advice. Just to be perfectly neutral and blunt, you need to have a better presentation than you did a year ago to get a price, and your price is probably not going to be as high as you would think it would have been a year ago. And it's not because you don't have a beautiful house. No one is saying anything bad about that. It's because buyers do not have access to the same money, and a house is a big chunk of money. So, and this is the other thing, just kind of a weird caveat. So I don't know if weird is the right word. So I went back about a month ago and looked at my transactions for this year, closings and that sort of thing. And what I realized was about 2/3, 3/4 of everything I've closed was never on the market. When that happens, honestly, everybody wins. The buyer doesn't have the competition to deal with. The seller gets the terms, the timelines, the numbers that they want. This is just something that I do all the time, where I have a conversation with three different people last week, and was just like, hey, if you're looking for something and you're just having a hard time with it, just let me know what you're looking for. If your, you know, sister's moving to town, just let me know what you're looking for. 'Cause whether it's resale or new construction, like, I know a bunch of builders in the area. I'm keeping tabs on what they've got, you know, currently on the market, what their current takedowns are in terms of new lot releases, floor plans, places they're building. It just takes a little bit of legwork, and quite frankly, you know, treating it like a job, as shocking as that is for most people to believe there's anybody in real estate that does that. There are some. I'm not the only one. There are some other great agents I love working with, but they're the rare exception. And sometimes it's literally just legwork. So if you have outgrown your house, if you have you know, big or small, you got too much house, you don't have enough house, you need a home office, you want to, you know, get some land somewhere and build something, you can send me an email or whatever. I'm happy to help you however I can. Pretty much anywhere in the North Georgia area. You know, this is the thing. Like, interest rates, I believe, are close to stabilizing here. Again, it might go up a little bit. A year from now, I don't necessarily anticipate our interest rates being lower. I don't expect them to be drastically higher, but a 0.5% interest rate changes will change your monthly payment for the life of your mortgage, unless you refinance. So we've had two first-time home buyers that reached out to us, that we got one under contract yesterday and the other one just real tough price point. So we're still trying to help them, but there are homes out there. There are still people buying and selling houses. Please don't get caught up in the crazy talk of, you know, 18% interest rate. It's just like, we do not need the world to get in the situation it was in to get to 3.5% interest rate again. Like, no one wants to go through global lockdown, COVID again. That's how we got to 3.5% interest rate to begin with. We're also not going back to Carter years. We're not going back to 18% interest rate. That's, you know, that is how people lose elections real quick. So just sometimes it just takes a little bit of common sense, a little bit of breathing. We had somebody, and quite frankly, knowing where to find stuff. We had a client that we just closed a week or so ago. They had been working with another agent for almost a year and a half. Agent wasn't really doing anything, just kind of send them stuff here and there and put in the auto search or whatever. And we had them under contract in 3 weeks. They just closed. They're super glad they closed because between when we put them under contract and when they closed, the interest rate had gone up a full percentage point just because of the timing for them. So, you know, they're tickled pink, first time home buyer, and it's not all doom and gloom, but you do need to be aware of what's going on in the market around you. The last thing, and this is not an advertisement or whatever, but have you seen Boxable? I am fascinated. I told somebody last week, I think this concept is the future of real estate or home buying or whatever. So Boxable, it's Boxabl. It's effectively taking a custom kind of new home product in a tiny house meets a modular, which I know modular kind of has a bad stigma to it. I've been in several modular homes. Inside, they're gorgeous. Like you would have no idea you're in a modular home if you were inside of one. But then when you go outside, you're like, oh, it's a box. So it is you can go online. It's boxabl.com probably. But it is, I think this is one of the industrial revolution of the home building world or home buying world. Because it is going to take out a lot of the high cost elements and the time issues behind building a house or having a custom home, and I don't know. I'm looking at this from my logistics and my practical side of my brain, and I'm like, this is like we're watching going from trains to having automobiles. Going from no internet to the internet and the technology revolution and the nanotechnology. I see this kind of, and I don't know if it's this company, but this kind of production or assembly or utilization of technology meets home building that is going to, one, help a lot of people have a good quality home for far less expensive than a traditional home would be, and it's not going to eliminate the custom home building world or production home building world that we currently have. It's just going to be something that's an option for people like tiny houses that never was before, and so just keep that kind of on your radar screen again. Not a plug for them. I'm not a current investor in their company or anything like that. But very, very interesting and fascinating concept. And I think it's going to have a lot of traction over the next 2 to 5 years. And I would expect there's going to be some people with some big pockets that are going to get in that space as well with them. So they're not going to own the industry or the segment per se. So hopefully that was helpful in terms of you understanding what's going on in the greater kind of realm that we live in, the real estate market as a whole in our area. And if you have any questions whatsoever, again, this is just I do what I do in real estate and in this podcast because I genuinely enjoy helping people. It's that simple. That's what makes me a good real estate agent. It's what when all the podcasts we do, when we get done, like it's like Groundhog Day. Literally every time we get done, everybody's like, "That was so much fun!" Like, I know, because this is something you're passionate about. I love, you know, getting to meet these people. I love getting to learn their stories. Many of them we've been to personally with our family. We've ordered stuff from. We buy stuff, gifts for our clients from them to support small businesses in our area. So lots of great positive things that come from this. But if you're at all worried about what you see on the news channel you follow, just know that's their whole goal. Their whole goal is fear, worry, panic. They will never show you the good that is going on in the world around you, only the things to terrify you and, quite frankly, steer you off course from really where you want to be in life. So if I can help you with anything, if you need some good books to read to just kind of recenter in whatever category of life, I'm happy to help.
This is the North Georgia Life Podcast. Embrace life where you live.